Tennessee law enforcement moved in before dawn. Five unmarked vans rolled onto a country road. Agents fanned out. They closed in on a rundown farmhouse. Inside, a man sat on a wooden chair. He stared at a wall of photos. Four faces stared back. Each photo carried a date. Each date marked a life stolen. You learn the full scope only after you see the evidence room. A map of graves. Tiny flags by each site. You trace red lines between them. They connect to the suspect's name. He lived among his victims for months. He spoke to their families. He helped in search parties. No one saw warning signs. I entered the crime scene hours after the arrest. I felt cold seep through my shoes. Bullet casings littered the yard. They formed a half circle around the porch. Bloodstains on the steps led inside. I counted the drops. Four. One for each victim. Families packed a nearby church. They waited for news. Some wept. Some stared at empty seats. They refused to leave until they saw the man in handcuffs. They wanted to measure his guilt with their own eyes. He refused to speak. The district attorney read charges at a press conference. Four counts of murder in the first degree. One count of kidnapping. One count of desecrating remains. The words hit like lead. Each syllable carried weight. I spoke to a sister. She asked how he moved through her town unnoticed. She said he smiled at kids in the grocery store. She said he answered her doorbell when her mother fell. She said she doesn't understand how a neighbor became a monster. Grief spread across that church like wildfire. It scorched every life it touched. It left nothing intact. It forced families into a new normal. It bound them in shared sorrow. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave a comment. The next story might change your mind. Don't miss a single turn. I sat in my car at 5:43 a.m. The call came through static. For bodies found along Carrington Road. I drove through mist that hung over Lake County. The radio crackled. A baby left in a stranger's yard. 40 miles away. 7 months old. I reached the crime scene at dawn. Yellow tape stretched between oak trees. Investigators moved quietly through wet grass. Blood on leaves. Spent shell casings marked with small flags. Each flag meant violence. Each flag meant someone died here. Detective Palmer met me at the perimeter. He wore latex gloves. His face showed fatigue. For victims, he said. All family. He pointed toward the woods. Bodies lay covered under white sheets. The wind lifted corners. I saw pale skin underneath. I followed him down a dirt path. Tire tracks pressed deep in mud. Two sets. One vehicle entered. Another left. Blood trail led from the road into trees. Drops every few feet. Someone was wounded. Someone crawled. The first body belonged to James Wilson, 21 years old, father of the abandoned baby. Two bullet wounds to the chest. Close range. Powder burns on his shirt. He fell face down. His wallet lay empty beside him. 20 feet away, we found Adriana Williams, 20 years old, mother of the baby. Single gunshot to the head. Execution style. Her purse scattered its contents. Lipstick. Keys. A photo of her daughter. The photo was soaked in blood. Courtney Rose was next. 38 years old. Grandmother to the baby. Multiple wounds. Defensive cuts on her hands. She fought back. Her cell phone lay cracked near her body. The screen showed missed calls. Someone tried to reach her. 15-year-old Braden Williams died last. Uncle to the baby. Shot in the back while running. His sneakers had mud caked on the soles. He made it 15 yards before the bullets found him. A young life cut short. I walked the scene for 2 hours. I photographed evidence. I mapped the positions. I tried to understand the sequence. The killer knew these people. This was personal. This was planned. Back at the road, I met Sheriff Box. He looked at me with hollow eyes. "Who does this to a family?" he asked. I had no answer. I had seen violence before. This felt different. This felt like hatred made flesh. The abandoned baby haunted me. Someone drove her 40 miles to safety. Someone left her where she would be found. Someone wanted her to live. The killer showed mercy for an infant, but none for her family. I drove to Tigrit. I found the house where the baby was discovered. An elderly woman named Sarah Mills lived there. She stood on her porch. She pointed to her front yard. "Right there," she said. "In the car seat. Just sitting there." I knelt where the baby was found. I examined the grass. Tire tracks in the gravel driveway. The killer parked here. The killer carried the baby to this spot. The killer made a choice. Save the child. Kill the rest. Mrs. Mills described the vehicle. White SUV or dark minivan, she said. Couldn't tell which. Happened so fast. She shook her head. Poor little thing. Crying in that heat. The temperature reached 116 degrees that day. The baby could have died from exposure. I interviewed neighbors. Most saw nothing. Heard nothing. Rural Tennessee stays quiet. People mind their business. But violence like this creates ripples. Fear spreads through small communities like wildfire. Austin Drummond's name surfaced by noon. 28 years old. Recently released from prison. Armed robbery conviction from 2013. Violent disciplinary record while incarcerated. Threats against jurors. The district attorney warned against his parole. Drummond had connections to the victims. He dated Adriana Williams' sister. He knew the family. He visited their home. He ate at their table. He gained their trust. Then he killed them. The manhunt began immediately. Tennessee Bureau of Investigation took lead. FBI joined the search. U.S. Marshals offered rewards. 24-hour surveillance on known associates. Roadblocks on major highways. Helicopters swept rural areas. I returned to the crime scene at sunset. The bodies were gone. The blood remained. Dark stains on fallen leaves. The wind carried the smell of death. I closed my eyes. I tried to imagine their final moments. James Wilson died first. Quick shots to the chest. He probably never saw it coming. Adriana Williams watched her boyfriend die. Then faced her own execution. Courtney Rose fought for her life. The wounds told her story. Braden Williams ran. Terror drove his 15-year-old legs. Night fell over Lake County. I drove home through empty roads. My notebook filled with details. Names. Times. Evidence. But grief isn't contained in reports. Grief lives in the spaces between facts. In the silence where laughter used to be. For people murdered. One baby saved. A community shattered. A killer on the run. This was how it started. This was day one of a manhunt that would grip Tennessee. This was the beginning of something dark. The radio crackled again. Another tip. Another false lead. Drummond had vanished. He could be anywhere. He could strike again. Law enforcement worked through the night. Families locked their doors. Children stayed inside. I looked at the evidence photos one more time. Four faces. Four lives. For dreams ended by violence. Their killer walked free under the same stars that watched them die. Justice waited. Justice would have to wait. The hunt for Austin Drummond had begun. My phone buzzed at 6:14 a.m. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation took over the case. Special Agent Morgan called. His voice cut through static. "We need all available resources," he said. "This man is dangerous. He will kill again." I drove to the mobile command center set up on Highway 21. The parking lot looked like a military operation. Black SUVs with tinted windows. Unmarked vans with antenna arrays. FBI tactical teams in full gear. U.S. Marshals in bulletproof vests. Everyone moved with urgency. The manhunt began immediately. Dogs picked up Drummond's scent from the crime scene. They led handlers through thick woods. The trail went cold at a creek bed. Helicopters circled overhead. Their rotors chopped through morning air. Thermal cameras searched for body heat signatures. Agent Morgan briefed the team. He spread photos across a folding table. Drummond's mugshots. Prison intake photos. A timeline written in red marker. He served 10 years for armed robbery, Morgan said. Released in September. He was out on bond for attempted murder when he killed this family. I studied the photos. Drummond had cold eyes. A scar ran down his left cheek. Tattoos covered his neck. Prison ink. Gang symbols. The district attorney had warned against his release. The parole board ignored the warning. Now four people were dead. The first vehicle was found at noon. A white 2016 Audi with front end damage. Blood on the steering wheel. Cigarette butts in the ashtray. Fast food wrappers on the floor. Drummond had been living in the car. He had nowhere to go. Nowhere safe. The Audi sat abandoned on Monaco Road in Jackson. 40 miles from the murder scene. Drummond was on foot now. He moved through dense forests. He avoided main roads. He stayed invisible. But someone was helping him. Someone gave him shelter. Someone fed him. Someone kept him hidden. By evening, three arrests shook the investigation. Tanaka Brown. Giovant Thomas. Dara Sanders. All charged with accessory after the fact. They helped Drummond escape. They provided transportation. They destroyed evidence. They lied to investigators. I interviewed Brown's neighbor. She described strange activity. Cars coming and going at all hours. People carrying bags. Hushed conversations on the porch. Something was wrong, she said. You could feel it in the air. Thomas worked at a gas station on Highway 78. Video showed him buying supplies. Bottles of water. Energy bars. Camping gear. He paid in cash. He avoided eye contact with the cashier. He drove directly to a wooded area where Drummond was hiding. Sanders lived near Jackson. Her phone records showed dozens of calls to unknown numbers. Text messages in code. Meeting locations in rural areas. She moved money between accounts. She rented storage units under false names. The second vehicle appeared Saturday. A white 1988 Ford pickup truck with a red stripe. Found near Burnt Mill Road in Dyersburg. Engine still warm. Keys in the ignition. More blood. More evidence. Drummond was bleeding. He was wounded. He was desperate. I drove to the truck's location. The road ended at a tree line. Beyond the trees lay swampland. Standing water. Thick undergrowth. Perfect cover for a fugitive. Search teams deployed on airboats. They moved slowly through murky channels. They found nothing. Sunday night changed everything. A doorbell camera at Cornerstone Community Church captured Drummond on video. He wore camouflage clothing. He carried an assault rifle. He tried to enter the building. He tested doors. He peered through windows. He looked thin. He looked desperate. The video showed a man on the edge. His face was gaunt. His movements were erratic. He jumped at every sound. He checked over his shoulder constantly. 6 days on the run had broken him down. But he was still armed. He was still dangerous. I watched the video dozens of times. I studied his body language. He moved like a hunted animal. He stayed in shadows. He avoided open spaces. He was looking for shelter. He was looking for food. He was looking for a way out. Jackson police issued alerts immediately. Residents locked their doors. They secured sheds and outbuildings. They checked security cameras. They called in suspicious activity. The community became the eyes and ears of law enforcement. Schools went on lockdown Monday morning. Union College closed its campus. Students evacuated dormitories. Parents picked up children early. The city held its breath. Everyone waited for the next sighting. Everyone feared the next violence. The manhunt intensified. More helicopters. More search teams. More roadblocks. The reward grew to $32,000. Tips poured in from across the state. Most were false leads. A few contained solid information. I rode with a K-9 unit through Jackson neighborhoods. The dogs worked methodically. They checked every yard, every shed, every abandoned building. Their handlers followed with weapons drawn. The tension was thick. Everyone expected gunfire. U.S. Marshal Tyrese Miller commanded the Two Rivers Violent Fugitive Task Force. His team had captured over 3,000 violent offenders. They knew how to hunt dangerous men. They surrounded the search area. They waited for Drummond to make a mistake. He's tired, Miller told me. He's hungry. He's running out of friends. Someone will turn him in for the money. Or he'll do something stupid. Either way, we'll get him. The break came Tuesday morning at 8:03 a.m. Multiple citizens called in sightings near Express Drive and Country Club Lane. Drummond was spotted trying to carjack a vehicle. He failed. He ran into woods. He was trapped. The shelter-in-place order went out immediately. Residents were told to lock their doors. Stay inside. Avoid windows. Law enforcement moved in. Officers surrounded the wooded area. They established a perimeter. They began closing the net. At 8:57 a.m. another citizen called. Drummond was seen near Pleasant Plains Road. He was moving on foot. He carried his rifle. He looked around frantically. He was running out of options. Officers Trout, Compton, and Drown moved in. They had trained for this moment. They knew Drummond was armed. They knew he was desperate. They approached carefully. They used cover. They coordinated their movements. At 9:05 a.m. the call came over the radio. Suspect in custody. No shots fired. No injuries. Austin Robert Drummond was captured alive. The week-long manhunt was over. Justice could begin. I arrived at the arrest scene 20 minutes later. Drummond sat in the back of a patrol car. His hands were cuffed behind his back. His face was dirty. His clothes were torn. He stared straight ahead. He said nothing. The relief was immediate. Residents came out of their homes. Children went back to school. The community began to heal. but 4 people were still dead. 1 baby was still an orphan. The grief remained. The questions remained. Drummond was transported to Lake County Jail. He was charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder, aggravated kidnapping, weapons violations. He would face the death penalty. He would answer for what he did to that family. I drove home through quiet streets. The helicopters were gone. The roadblocks were removed. Jackson returned to normal. But normal felt different now. The fear lingered. The violence had touched this community. It had left scars that would take time to heal. That night I wrote in my notebook, 7 days of terror, 7 days of grief, 7 days of searching. Now came the hard part. Now came the trial. Now came the search for answers. Why did Austin Drummond kill 4 innocent people? Why did he spare their baby? What drove him to such violence? The manhunt was over. The reckoning had just begun. I arrived at Lake County Jail as gray dawn broke. The building sat empty and cold. No reporters waited outside. No crowds gathered for justice. Austin Drummond was processed in silence. Booked on 4 counts of first-degree murder. Photographed. Fingerprinted. Locked away. Sheriff Brian Avery met me at the front entrance. He wore a pressed uniform. His badge reflected fluorescent light from the lobby. He spoke in measured tones. "We got him," he said. "Now comes the hard part." The capture happened fast. Citizens called at 8:03 a.m. reporting a carjacking attempt. Drummond failed. He ran into woods near Bridle Path Drive. Officers surrounded the area. They closed the net. At 9:05 a.m. officers Trout, Compton, and Drown made the arrest. No shots fired. No resistance. The manhunt was over. I reviewed the arrest report. Drummond was found hiding behind fallen logs. He was thin. He was dirty. He was exhausted. 7 days on the run had broken him down. He weighed less than when his mugshot was taken. His clothes were torn. His shoes had holes. His face showed defeat. Detective Palmer led me to the interrogation room. A metal table sat in the center. 2 chairs faced each other. Recording equipment mounted on the wall. No windows. No distractions. This was where Drummond would tell his story. This was where we would learn why 4 people died. Drummond was brought in wearing orange jail clothing. His hands were cuffed. His feet were shackled. He moved slowly. He stared at the floor. He said nothing when asked basic questions. Name. Age. Address. He gave one-word answers. His voice was barely a whisper. The interrogation began at 2:30 p.m. District Attorney Danny Goodman watched from an observation room. TBI Director David Roche stood beside him. Both men had worked violent cases before. Both had seen killers confess. Neither expected what came next. Drummond sat motionless for 20 minutes. He didn't ask for water. He didn't ask for a lawyer. He stared at his hands. Tears fell onto the metal table. Each drop made a small sound in the silent room. Detective Palmer leaned forward. "Austin," he said, "tell us what happened." Drummond looked up for the first time. His eyes were red. His face was hollow. "I never meant for the baby to get hurt," he whispered. The confession came in fragments. Broken sentences. Long pauses. Drummond spoke about anger. About betrayal. About feeling abandoned by people he trusted. He said Adriana Williams promised to help him after prison. She said she would be there. She wasn't. Drummond was released from Northwest Correctional Complex on September 1, 2024. He had nowhere to go. No money. No job. No family that would take him. He reached out to Adriana Williams. She had dated his cousin years before. She had written letters while he was in prison. She had promised to help. The help never came. Adriana was busy with her new baby. She was focused on building a life with James Wilson. She ignored Drummond's calls. She didn't return his texts. She treated him like a stranger. This rejection festered into rage. Drummond said he went to confront her on July 29th. He drove to the house on Carrington Road. He brought a gun. He planned to scare her. He wanted her to understand his pain. He wanted her to acknowledge what she had done to him. The confrontation turned violent quickly. James Wilson stepped between Drummond and Adriana. Words were exchanged. Wilson pushed Drummond away from his girlfriend. Drummond pulled the gun. He shot Wilson twice in the chest. Wilson fell immediately. He died within minutes. Adriana screamed. She ran toward her baby. Drummond followed. He couldn't let her escape. She had witnessed a murder. She could identify him. He shot her once in the head. She collapsed beside her daughter's car seat. The baby started crying. Courtney Rose heard the gunshots from inside the house. She came running with her son, Braden. She saw her daughter's body. She saw Wilson bleeding in the dirt. She understood immediately what was happening. She grabbed Braden's hand. She tried to run. Drummond caught them in the yard. Rose fought. She clawed at his face. She screamed for help. She tried to protect her 15-year-old son. Drummond shot her multiple times. She fell forward. She died protecting Braden with her body. Braden broke free. He ran toward the woods. He was fast. He was young. He almost made it to the tree line. Drummond shot him in the back. The boy fell face first into dead leaves. He was 15 years old. He had his whole life ahead of him. The baby was still crying. Drummond stood over four bodies. Blood soaked the ground. The smell of gunpowder filled the air. He looked at the infant in her car seat. She was 7 months old. She was innocent. She was alive. Drummond made a choice. He lifted the car seat. He carried the baby to his vehicle. He drove 40 miles to Tigrit. He placed the car seat in Sarah Mills' front yard. He rang the doorbell. He drove away before she answered. He saved the baby's life. Why? Detective Palmer asked. Why kill them but save her? Drummond was quiet for a long time. He wiped his eyes. She didn't do anything wrong, he said. She was just a baby. She didn't know her mama lied to me. The interrogation continued for 6 hours. Drummond provided details only the killer would know. He described the sequence of shots. He explained why he moved the bodies. He led investigators to where he hid the murder weapon, a .357 Magnum revolver buried near Indian Creek. DNA evidence confirmed Drummond's presence at the scene. His fingerprints were on the car seat. His blood was on broken glass from Wilson's cell phone. Security cameras showed his vehicle leaving the area at 4:17 p.m. The timeline matched his confession perfectly. Three accomplices had helped him escape. Tanaka Brown provided transportation after Drummond abandoned the first vehicle. Giovant Thomas bought supplies and camping gear. Doara Sanders moved money and rented safe houses. All three were charged as accessories to murder. The interrogation ended at 8:47 p.m. Drummond was returned to his cell. He would be held without bond. He would face the death penalty. He would spend his remaining days in solitary confinement waiting for trial. I walked out of the jail into cool night air. Stars were visible above rural Lake County. The same stars that watched four people die. The same stars that watched a baby get abandoned in a stranger's yard. The same stars that watched a killer finally get caught. The confession answered many questions. But grief doesn't care about answers. Grief lives in the silence where voices used to be. Grief lives in empty chairs at dinner tables. Grief lives in photos that will never be updated. For families lost loved ones. A community lost its sense of safety. A baby girl lost her parents, grandmother, and uncle. She would grow up without knowing their voices. She would learn about them through stories and photographs. She would carry their loss her entire life. Austin Drummond's capture brought some closure. But closure is different from healing. Healing takes time. Healing takes community support. Healing takes acknowledging that some wounds never fully close. The next morning, I visited the crime scene one last time. Yellow tape had been removed. The blood had been washed away by rain. The trees looked the same. The road looked the same. But everything was different now. Violence had touched this place. Death had visited this ground. I knelt where James Wilson died. I closed my eyes. I tried to imagine his last moments. Protecting the woman he loved. Protecting his infant daughter. Standing between them and danger. He was 21 years old. He died a hero. Adriana Williams was 20 years old. She was building a life with the man she loved. She was learning to be a mother. She had dreams for her daughter's future. All of those dreams died with her in the dirt beside Carrington Road. Courtney Rose was 38 years old. She was raising her teenage son alone. She was helping her daughter learn to be a parent. She fought for Braden's life with her last breath. She died protecting the child she had brought into this world. Braden Williams was 15 years old. He played basketball. He made good grades. He looked forward to getting his driver's license. He ran toward the woods trying to escape death. He almost made it. Almost wasn't enough. Their killer sat in a jail cell 70 miles away. He had food. He had shelter. He had medical care. He had more than his victims would ever have again. Justice would come. But justice couldn't bring them back. The baby girl was safe with foster parents. She would be adopted by loving relatives. She would grow up surrounded by people who remembered her parents. She would learn their names. She would see their photographs. She would carry their memory forward. This was how violence ripples through communities. One man's anger destroyed multiple families. One man's choices created lifelong trauma for dozens of people. One man's moment of rage changed everything for everyone who loved those four victims. Austin Drummond confessed. The case was solved. The manhunt was over. But grief would continue. Grief would visit family dinners and birthday parties. Grief would sit in empty seats at graduation ceremonies. Grief would shadow every holiday and anniversary. The investigation was complete. The confession was recorded. The evidence was processed. Now came the trial. Now came the sentencing. Now came the long wait for justice to run its course through Tennessee's legal system. I drove home as the sun set over Lake County. Another day ended. Another chapter closed. But the story of these four victims would continue. Their names would be remembered. Their lives would be honored. Their deaths would not be forgotten. The hunt for Austin Drummond was over. The pursuit of justice had just begun. The Lake County Courthouse stood empty at dawn on August 6th. I arrived before anyone else. The flag hung still in humid air. No wind stirred the trees. The building waited. Justice was coming. But justice moves slowly in Tennessee courts. Austin Drummond would appear before Judge William Goff at 2 p.m. First appearance. Constitutional rights read aloud. Formal charges entered. Bond hearing. The process that decides if someone accused of murder walks free or stays locked away. For families waited for this moment. I sat in the gallery an hour early. Wooden benches lined the courtroom like church pews. The state seal hung behind the judge's bench. Scales of justice carved in mahogany. Everyone talks about blind justice. But the families could see everything. They could see their killer. They could measure his remorse. District Attorney Danny Goodman arrived at 1:30 p.m. He carried three boxes of evidence. Photographs. Witness statements. Ballistics reports. DNA analysis. The paper trail that connects a man to murder. He wore a dark suit. His face was grim. He had prosecuted killers before. This case felt different. The victims' families filled the front rows. Relatives of James Wilson. Friends of Adriana Williams. Courtney Rose's co-workers. Neighbors who knew Braden Williams. They wore photos on their shirts. Buttons with the victims' faces. They wanted Drummond to see who he had killed. They wanted him to remember their names. At 2:03 p.m. the bailiff called for order. Judge Goff entered through a side door. Black robes flowing. Gray hair combed back. He had served Lake County for 22 years. He had seen violence. He had sentenced killers. He understood the weight of what was happening. "Bring in the defendant," Judge Goff said. His voice echoed in the silent courtroom. Two deputies escorted Drummond through double doors. Orange jumpsuit. Leg irons. Handcuffs connected to a chain around his waist. He moved slowly. He kept his eyes down. He refused to look at the families. Public defender Sarah Mitchell stood beside Drummond. She was appointed that morning. She had handled capital cases before. She knew Tennessee death penalty law. She knew her client faced execution if convicted. She spoke quietly to him. He nodded. He said nothing aloud. Judge Goff read the charges. For counts of first-degree murder. Aggravated kidnapping. Felon in possession of a firearm. Weapons violations during commission of a felony. Each charge carried life in prison. The murder charges carried death. The words hit like hammer blows. "How do you plead?" Judge Goff asked. Mitchell stood. "My client enters no plea at this time, Your Honor. Standard procedure in capital cases. The defense needs time to study evidence. They need time to prepare. They need time to decide if their client should fight or negotiate." The bond hearing began immediately. Goodman stood at the prosecutor's table. He opened a thick folder. He pulled out crime scene photographs. He placed them on an easel facing the judge. For bodies. Blood on leaves. Shell casings marked with evidence flags. "Your Honor," Goodman said, "the defendant is charged with murdering four members of the same family, including a 15-year-old child. The evidence is overwhelming. DNA at the scene. Fingerprints on the car seat. Video surveillance showing his vehicle leaving the area. A full confession to investigators." Goodman continued. He described Drummond's criminal history. Armed robbery at 16. 13 years in prison. 25 disciplinary infractions. Possession of deadly weapons. Assault. Gang activity. Threats against jurors. Recent charges for attempted murder while in prison. This defendant was released on bond for attempted murder when he killed this family, Goodman said. He had help evading capture. Three associates are charged as accessories. He is dangerous. He is a flight risk. He should be held without bond pending trial. Mitchell argued for reasonable bond. She said Drummond had ties to the community. He had no passport. He had limited resources. He posed no danger if properly supervised. She requested electronic monitoring, house arrest, regular check-ins with probation officers. Judge Goff listened without interruption. He made notes on a legal pad. He studied the crime scene photos. He read Drummond's arrest record. He looked at the defendant. Drummond never raised his head. He sat motionless. He showed no emotion. The court finds the defendant poses a significant danger to the community, Judge Goff said. The nature of these crimes is extremely violent. The defendant has a history of violence in prison and in the community. Bond is denied. The defendant will remain in custody without bond pending trial. The gavel fell. Drummond was led away. The families remained seated. Some wept quietly. Others stared at the empty defendant's chair. Their loved ones were still dead. But the killer was locked away. That was something. That was a start. I followed Goodman to the courthouse steps. He faced a crowd of reporters. Cameras rolled. Microphones pointed toward his face. He had done this before. He knew how to handle media attention. He knew what the families needed to hear. Today we took the first step toward justice, Goodman said. Austin Drummond will be held accountable for these heinous crimes. We will seek the maximum penalty allowed under Tennessee law. We will not rest until justice is served for James Wilson, Adriana Williams, Courtney Rose, and Braden Williams. A reporter asked about the death penalty. Tennessee had executed only 6 people since 1977. The state maintained death row at Riverbend Maximum Security Institution. Lethal injection was the primary method. Electric chair remained available for older cases. The process took years. Appeals dragged on. Some inmates died of natural causes before execution. We will file notice of intent to seek death within 30 days, Goodman said. These crimes meet the statutory requirements for capital punishment. Multiple victims. Murder of a child. Especially heinous and cruel manner. We believe the death penalty is appropriate in this case. I drove to Northwest Correctional Complex, the prison where Drummond served his first sentence, where he committed attempted murder while incarcerated, where he lived like a king among inmates. The prison system had failed. They had released a monster back into society. Warden James Carroll met me at the administration building. He wore a pressed uniform. His office was small but organized. Files lined metal shelves. A photo of his family sat on his desk. He had worked corrections for 30 years. He had seen the worst of humanity. This case bothered him. Drummond was a problem from day one, Carroll said. 25 disciplinary infractions. Drugs in his cell. Makeshift weapons. Gang recruitment. He threatened staff. He assaulted inmates. He should never have been released. I reviewed Drummond's prison file. The disciplinary reports told a story. Violence. Defiance. Criminal activity behind bars. He had access to contraband. Cell phones. Alcohol. Streaming devices. He posted photos on social media. He bragged about his comfortable life. Prison officials looked the other way. The attempted murder happened in August 2023. Drummond attacked another inmate with a sharpened piece of metal. The victim required emergency surgery. He nearly died. Drummond was charged. He made bond after his release. He was free when he killed the Williams family. I met with former inmates who knew Drummond. They spoke on condition of anonymity. They described a man consumed with rage. He blamed society for his problems. He blamed the system. He blamed everyone except himself. He talked about getting revenge. He talked about making people pay. He said he was going to hurt someone, one former inmate told me. He said people owed him. He said he was going to collect when he got out. We thought he was just talking. Prison makes people say crazy things. But he meant it. He really meant it. The grand jury would meet in September. 23 citizens would review the evidence. They would decide if charges were justified. They would vote on indictments. The process was secret, but the outcome was certain. The evidence was overwhelming. Drummond had confessed. The grand jury would indict. The trial would begin in 2026, maybe 2027. Capital cases move slowly. The defense would file dozens of motions. They would challenge evidence. They would request delays. they would explore every legal avenue. Their client's life depended on it. They had no choice but to fight. I returned to the courthouse. The victims' families had gathered in the district attorney's office. They met with victim advocates. They learned about the legal process. They prepared for years of court hearings. Years of reliving the worst day of their lives. Years of waiting for justice. Mary Wilson spoke for the families. She was James Wilson's grandmother. She had raised him after his parents died. She watched him become a father. She saw him die in a hospital bed. The grief had aged her. She looked older than her 73 years. "We want justice," she said. "We want this man to pay for what he did to our babies." James was 21 years old. He was trying to build a life with Adriana. They had a beautiful daughter together. That monster took everything from them. He took everything from us. The baby girl was in foster care. She was healthy. She was loved. She would be adopted by relatives. She would grow up hearing stories about her parents. She would see their photographs. She would know she was wanted. She would know she was survived because someone chose mercy in a moment of violence. Tennessee Death Row housed 47 inmates. They lived in single cells. They were allowed 1 hour of recreation daily. They received 3 meals through food slots. They could watch television. They could read books. They could write letters. Some had been there for decades. Some would die of old age before execution. The appeals process was complex. Direct appeal to the Tennessee Supreme Court. Post-conviction review in state court. Federal habeas corpus petition. Appeals to federal circuit court. Possible review by the U.S. Supreme Court. Each step took years. Each step cost taxpayers money. Each step prolonged the agony for victims' families. But some inmates were executed. Byron Black died by lethal injection on August 5, 2025, the same day Drummond was captured. Black had killed his girlfriend and her 2 young daughters in 1988. He spent 37 years on death row. The families waited 4 decades for justice. They got it. Eventually. I thought about time. How it moves differently for different people. For Austin Drummond, time was running out. He would spend years in a cell. He would file appeals. He would hope for mercy. He would face the reality that Tennessee kills murderers. Not often, but sometimes, when the crimes are heinous enough. For the victims' families, time had stopped on July 29, 2025, the day their loved ones died, the day their world ended, the day they learned that evil walks among us. Time would start again eventually, but the clock would always be broken. The hands would always point back to that moment, that loss, that grief. The courthouse emptied as evening approached. The reporters left. The families went home. The lawyers returned to their offices. Austin Drummond sat in a cell. He ate a meal through a food slot. He watched television on a small screen. He thought about what came next. Tomorrow would bring new court filings, new motions, new delays. The machinery of justice would continue its slow grind toward resolution. But tonight was quiet. Tonight belonged to the dead. To James Wilson and Adriana Williams. To Courtney Rose and Braden Williams. To the family they had been. To the future they would never see. The first hearing was over. Many more would follow. Justice was coming. Slowly. Surely. But coming nonetheless. September brought funeral processions through Lake County. For hearses moved slowly down Highway 21. Black cars followed in silence. The first service was for James Wilson, 21 years old. Father. Protector. Hero. He died defending his family. He died standing between danger and the people he loved most. I sat in the back of New Hope Baptist Church. The sanctuary overflowed with mourners. Wilson's grandmother spoke through tears. She had raised him after his parents died. She watched him become a man. She watched him fall in love with Adriana Williams. She watched him become a father to baby Weslyn. She never got to watch him grow old. James was a good boy, she said. Her voice broke. He worked hard. He loved his family. He protected them until his last breath. He died the way he lived, putting others first. The congregation wept. Men removed their hats. Women clutched tissues. Children who knew James sat quietly. They were learning about loss. They were learning about grief. Adriana Williams was buried the next day. 20 years old. Mother. Daughter. Victim. She had dreams for her baby girl. She wanted to see Weslyn take first steps. She wanted to hear first words. She wanted to teach her daughter about love and kindness and hope. Those dreams died with her on Carrington Road. her mother spoke at the service. Courtney Rose would be buried tomorrow, but today belonged to her daughter. Adriana was pure light, she said. She saw good in everyone, even people who didn't deserve it. She believed in second chances. She believed in redemption. She believed Austin Drummond could change. She was wrong, but that doesn't make her foolish. That makes her human. The third funeral was hardest. Courtney Rose was 38 years old. Single mother. Provider. Fighter. She had raised her children alone. She had worked multiple jobs. She had sacrificed everything for their future. She died trying to save her son. She died protecting a 15-year-old boy who called her mom. The fourth service broke hearts across Tennessee. Braden Williams was 15 years old. Student. Athlete. Brother. He played basketball at Dyer County High School. He made honor roll. He dreamed of college. He dreamed of playing professional sports. He dreamed of making his mother proud. He died running toward woods that would never shelter him. Baby Weslyn Wilson was placed with relatives. Good people who would raise her with love. People who would tell her about her parents. People who would show her photographs. People who would help her understand that she was wanted. That she was loved. That she survived because someone chose mercy in a moment of madness. Austin Drummond sat in a cell at Lake County Jail. He ate meals through a food slot. He watched television on a small screen. He wrote letters to no one. He had no visitors. His family had disowned him. His friends had abandoned him. He was alone with his guilt. Alone with his memories. Alone with the faces of four people he had killed. The grand jury met in October. 23 citizens reviewed evidence. They saw crime scene photographs. They heard testimony from investigators. They read Drummond's confession. They studied ballistics reports. They examined DNA evidence. The evidence was overwhelming. The confession was clear. The grand jury voted to indict. 4 counts of first-degree murder. Aggravated kidnapping. Felon in possession of a firearm. Using a firearm in commission of a violent felony. Each murder charge carried life without parole. Each murder charge carried death. District Attorney Danny Goodman filed notice. He would seek the death penalty. Austin Drummond would face execution if convicted. The Tennessee death penalty process moves slowly. Direct appeal to the Tennessee Supreme Court takes an average of 1,350 days. That's nearly 4 years. Then comes state post-conviction review. Then federal habeas corpus. The average time from sentence to execution is 12 years. Some inmates wait longer. Some die of natural causes. Some get clemency. But most die by lethal injection. Public defender Sarah Mitchell assembled her team. Capital defense lawyers. Mitigation specialists. Investigators. Mental health experts. Their job was to save Drummond's life. They would argue mental illness. They would argue childhood trauma. They would argue anything that might convince a jury to spare him. They had no choice. Their client faced death. I interviewed Mitchell in her office. Law books lined the walls. Case files covered her desk. Photos of clients hung in frames. Some were free. Some were in prison. Some were dead. She had fought the death penalty for 20 years. She had saved lives. She had also lost. She understood the stakes. Austin Drummond did something terrible, she said. But the state killing him won't bring those people back. It won't heal the families. It won't make anyone safer. It will just create more violence. More death. More grief. She paused. She looked at a photo on her desk. A former client who was executed in 2018. I couldn't save that one, she said. Maybe I can save this one. The victims' families felt differently. They wanted justice. They wanted revenge. They wanted Austin Drummond to pay with his life. They attended court hearings. They wore photos of their loved ones. They watched every proceeding. They waited for the trial. They waited for the verdict. They waited for the execution. Mary Wilson spoke for the families. James Wilson's grandmother. The woman who raised him. The woman who buried him. That man took everything from us, she said. He took James. He took Adriana. He took Courtney. He took Braden. He left a baby without parents. He destroyed multiple families. He deserves to die for what he did. The trial was scheduled for March 2026. Judge William Goff would preside. The same judge who denied bond. The same judge who would sentence Drummond if convicted. The courtroom would be packed. Media would cover every moment. The nation would watch. Tennessee would decide if Austin Drummond lived or died. I drove to Riverbend Maximum Security Institution, Tennessee's death row. home to 47 condemned inmates. They lived in single cells, 6 feet by 9 feet, a bed, a toilet, a sink, a television. They were allowed 1 hour of recreation daily. They could walk in a small yard. They could see the sky. They could remember what freedom felt like. Death row inmates eat their final meal requests. They meet with spiritual advisors. They say goodbye to family members. They write final statements. Then they are strapped to a gurney. They receive lethal injections. They die within minutes. Their bodies are claimed by relatives or buried in prison cemeteries. Their names join lists of the executed. Byron Black was executed on August 5, 2025, the same day Austin Drummond was captured. Black had killed his girlfriend and her two daughters in 1988. He spent 37 years on death row. He died by lethal injection at Riverbend. His final words were, "I'm sorry." The families of his victims watched. They found closure. They found peace. Tennessee had executed only 7 people since 1977. The state was cautious about capital punishment. Appeals took years. Reviews were thorough. Mistakes were rare. But when the evidence was clear, when the crimes were heinous, when the victims demanded justice, Tennessee would kill. The state would fulfill its promise. The state would seek ultimate punishment. I returned to the crime scene one final time. Winter had come to Lake County. Snow covered the ground where 4 people died. The trees were bare. The road was quiet. Nothing marked the spot where violence erupted. Nothing remembered the victims. Nothing honored their memory. Just silence. Just cold. Just the knowledge that evil had walked here. The investigation was complete. The confession was recorded. The indictments were filed. The trial was scheduled. But questions remained. Why did Austin Drummond kill 4 innocent people? What drove him to such violence? Was it anger? Was it mental illness? Was it pure evil? The trial would seek answers. The families deserve truth. The baby girl would grow up without knowing her parents' voices. She would learn their names from photographs. She would hear their stories from relatives. She would carry their legacy. She would live the life they died protecting. She would be their greatest victory, their most precious gift, their lasting love. Austin Drummond would live or die based on 12 citizens' decision. 12 people who would hear evidence. 12 people who would see photographs. 12 people who would listen to families. 12 people who would decide if murder deserves death. 12 people who would carry that weight forever. The appeals process would drag on for years. Motions filed. Hearings scheduled. Arguments presented. Delays granted. The families would attend every session. They would watch Austin Drummond age in custody. They would watch him appeal his conviction. They would watch him fight for his life while their loved ones remained dead. Tennessee's death chamber waited. A sterile room with a gurney. Restraining straps. For lines. Heart monitors. Viewing windows for witnesses. The same room where Byron Black died. The same room where Oscar Smith died. The same room where Austin Drummond might die. If justice demanded it. If 12 citizens agreed. If appeals failed. The story would continue long after I stopped writing. The trial would happen. The verdict would come. The sentence would be pronounced. The appeals would be filed. The execution might occur. Or clemency might be granted. Or natural death might intervene. Only time would tell. Only justice would decide. 4 people were murdered on July 29, 2025. James Wilson. Adriana Williams. Courtney Rose. Braden Williams. Their killer was captured. Their killer confessed. Their killer would face trial. Their killer might face death. But they would remain dead. Their voices silenced. Their dreams ended. Their future stolen. The manhunt was over. The capture was complete. The confession was given. The trial was coming. Justice was seeking its course through Tennessee's legal system. Slowly. Carefully. Thoroughly. The families would wait. The community would heal. The baby would grow. The killer would age in a cell. This was how violence ripples through time. One man's rage destroyed multiple families. One man's choices created lifelong trauma. One man's evil touched everyone who loved those 4 victims. The scars would remain. The grief would continue. The questions would linger. But justice would pursue its path. Austin Drummond sat in solitary confinement. He had killed 4 people. He had confessed to murder. He would face the ultimate penalty. He would answer for his crimes. He would pay the price for evil. Tennessee would ensure it. The families would witness it. Justice would demand it. The dead cannot speak. but their memory speaks. Their love speaks. Their sacrifice speaks. James Wilson died protecting his family. Adriana Williams died loving her daughter. Courtney Rose died defending her son. Braden Williams died trying to escape. They died as heroes. They lived as family. They deserve justice. They deserve peace. They deserve to be remembered. Their story ends here, but their legacy continues. In a baby girl who will grow up loved. In a community that came together. In a justice system that pursued truth. In families that chose forgiveness over hatred. In the knowledge that good people still exist. That love conquers evil. That light defeats darkness. That justice, though delayed, will come. The Tennessee quadruple murder case is closed. The suspect is captured. The trial awaits. Justice will be served. The families will heal. The baby will thrive. And four innocent people will be remembered as more than victims. They will be remembered as family, as love, as light, as proof that good exists in this world. Even when evil tries to destroy it,